Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening. Come in. I'm not E.G. Marshall, nor do I pretend to be. I'm Dale Kay from Spook Show. Welcome to Erie House Oldie Timey Radio. I'm accompanied by...
Dave Bigley from Weirdest Really Bad Movie and Spaceship One, and we're accompanied by...
Ladies first.
I already introduced myself. Greece. What are you talking about?
Oh, my goodness. Well, greetings and felicitations. This is CW here to help spill the tea as well as the secret.
And keep us in line. And she's accompanied by...
It is I, Gar the Ghoul, blah, blah, to you all.
There we go. Full house, gang. And a full house, as we know, is better than a royal... Yeah, because that would be royal flush. Let's see.
We should all sit now and go, as we're all now refreshed.
Wash your hands. Wash your hands.
The communal flush, yeah.
Wash your hands.
Okay, I wash them, but do I have to wipe them afterwards? Because, you know, I just washed them.
No, we got the air
dryer. Am I getting dirty again?
We got the hand dryer, the blow dryer.
Yeah, there you go.
We're sanitary here.
It is.
If anybody dies around here, it's going to be deliberate. What?
All right.
Oh, yeah. Hey, don't make me pull out the Lysol.
See?
Mm.
To my point.
There you go. Hello to the chat people, to Pugbane and good old Bob.
Yay, welcome, or hi, as we like to say. And ugga, ugga, boo, ugga, boo, boo, ugga, or something like that. It's all about secrets, government secrets. We're releasing them all tonight. That's right. Darn that government.
We're spilling them. Of course, we got a mop to clean them up afterwards, but we're still spilling them.
We're still spilling this mess.
Fresh. Oh, yeah. Mess fresh from Area 51.
Yep. Yeah. And three
we had two state
them.
Secrets, and then we've got two that are just spooky secrets.
Ooh, good. I like spooky, spooky good. We got three, count them, three episodes tonight. Crisis.
No.
Three.
Three.
Oh.
Uno, dos, three. Crisis.
Okay.
Suspense and Johnny Dollar.
Oh, okay. Explain. Tomorrow got booted. All right.
Yeah, that wasn't really a secret, Gar.
Yeah.
No, it was just weird.
The secret got out on that one prematurely, let's just say.
Alrighty then. That was more about kidnapping and consent. Wouldn't fly today, but it was like weird.
It would definitely be a hashtag Me Too story on that one.
Yeah, it would.
Yeah, oh my gosh. Oh
yeah.
My goodness.
Where is the ruler? Yeah. Where is the ruler? Where is it?
I'm in shock.
But in 1958, it was okay.
You never hear me talking like that.
What can I say?
That was damn funny.
Oh, my. Grabbing the clutching pearl.
She's going to whack us with a yardstick.
I'm amazed at all the torture devices CW has.
Yeah,
borrowed from Sissy Knucklebuster.
It goes with the Plague Doctor outfit.
Absolutely. Oh,
that's another Me Too story. But anyway.
It's called accessorizing. Accessorizing. That's all it is.
Uh-huh.
Yep, three. Trying to count them. Three. Radio programs.
Yep.
Well, I can let this out of the bag then. That my moral for exploring tomorrow was
Wait a second.
Beauty's only skin deep.
No, okay. No, you can't.
Go ahead.
If we're going to do it, let's do it right.
There we go.
The hell? Eerie House Radio proudly presents Gar's moral of a story that we didn't hear.
For exploring tomorrow the secrets of all trappings from April 23rd, 1958, we came up with Beauty's Only Skin Deep, but Mutant is to the Bone. And I
now
don't have my blinders.
So
there you go.
There you go.
Now that wasn't so bad, was it?
It was disgusting.
Wow, double disgusting. Wow, wow.
It was.
Didn't know if the
first
one got
off the pack with that, yeah.
Wasn't sure the first one got through.
Yeah.
it was either that or one of the two.
Rocky, watch me pull a rabbit out of my hat. That one?
Here it is. As long as it's your hat.
not my sleeve.
or anywhere else.
Yeah.
But I digress. Mm. Where shall we begin?
That was a disturbing little episode, Exploring Tomorrow. That was weird.
Yep.
That's okay. We'll save it for later.
I'll have a different moral.
Why not? Because it'll be in a completely different context by then.
That's right. And my mind will be in a different place. The door, these amazing morals. So, we going to jump off with Crisis? Maybe?
Sure.
Why not?
Yes.
Let's keep you out of suspense, which will come up later. This episode called Building B-2000.
Corpus Delecti.
What more do we know about this one before we get started?
Ooh,
it's a secret.
Oh, okay.
Wait.
Fine.
I'm lost.
Be like that.
Is this correct? Tell me the episode title again.
Building B-2000.
B-2000.
Wait. None of my things have... It's called Corpus Delecti? No?
No. You're probably on the wrong... You're on the wrong week.
Did I send you the wrong one, buddy? I'm sorry.
The moral will work regardless, I guess. I don't know.
But...
Okay.
I may have... Because when I went to edit it, I saw, this is the wrong episode. And so I pulled the right one.
It was still a good secret. Corpus Delecti was a good secret, but okay. All right. So I don't know the air date. I'm not sure about the moral. I definitely don't know the episode title.
Hey, Gar, I'll whisper to you, then you can tell everybody, okay? Gar, it was December 26th, 1974.
It was a week later than the one I looked at, okay?
Yes.
You know my former partner once said it's like wrangling cats. But I digress.
It is. We now have an air date.
Well, and what would that air date be?
Sorry, Gar.
Oh my goodness.
He's forgotten all
I'm
that.
I'm going to use the same moral. We'll just see what happens.
Again,
maybe
the title. Building 2000.
Hey.
Yep.
December 26th of 1974.
There we go.
There you go. Yes.
Feels official now.
Sooner or later, when you least expect it, there comes a point of no return. From which there seems no escape. A moment in time. A moment of crisis.
me that again, General?
I said this area is off limits.
Even to a United States Senator?
I'm afraid so, Senator Varney.
Even to the chairman of the Defense Budget Committee?
Yes, sir.
You do realize that I can call the president and get into this building. But that if I have to do that, it's going to be embarrassing for you, General Close.
I'm very sorry, Senator. I have my orders.
From who?
From the president.
Listen. You listen to me, Cloves. Just what are you people trying to pull out here? What's going on in that building that's costing the taxpayers of this country $61 million?
Senator, I can't tell you.
It began with a routine annual budget review in Washington, D.C. Hawk Varney, Senator Peter C. Varney, went to work slashing every possible non-essential from the military spending budget for the biennium and decided to make in-person visits to establishments where there was any question about military appropriations. On July 18th, his junket took him to Fort Powell near the Utah-Nevada border. What actually happened at Fort Powell subsequent to his visit is, of course, still under the tightest security. But from what reports have been made and from what informed sources have speculated, a reasonably accurate picture can be assembled. In 1 minute, Crisis brings you this remarkable story. With the reminder, of course, that it is still just speculation. The title? Building B-2000. And now, Building B-2000. It should be borne in mind that Peter C. Varney was a man accustomed to power. Besides his influential position in the Senate, he held the rank of Brigadier General in the U.S. Air Force Reserve. He had distinguished himself as a pilot in World War II, earning the nickname that was to follow him through the rest of his career in public life, but you know all that. Hawk Varney was swift, powerful, and determined, and he preferred to work alone. Perhaps if he had brought a delegation with him to that sun-baked army base in the desert instead of arriving alone at the controls of his own rented private jet, things might have been different. But as it was, Hawk Varney swooped down without warning on that hot afternoon and began a minute inspection of Fort Powell.
My adjutant, Captain Wicker.
How do you do, sir? Captain?
We didn't get word you were coming.
I didn't send word.
Naturally, we're only too happy to have you on the post, Senator. Have you had lunch?
I ate at Muroc.
Oh. Well, I want to show you my quarters. You can use it as your base of operations. How long do you plan to be with us?
I don't know. It's all the same to you, General. I'd like to have a look around.
Certainly. Captain, bring my car. Powell was established in 1942 as an infantry training camp, Senator. After the war, it was partially deactivated.
Yes, I know all that. What I need to check out now is just how essential all this real estate is in our defense inventory.
Of course. Well, we do many jobs here. We're at the Odalite tracking facility for NASA.
I'm interested in the defense aspects, General.
Well, as you saw, we have an excellent air facility and warehousing capability for staging military cargo planes.
What's in all those warehouses?
They're empty just at present. Quartermaster Corps uses the post as a backup during the Vietnam War.
I have all those figures, General.
Well, that's right. You would, of course.
Tell me about the tank testing range.
It's about 5 miles ahead. There's no activity there at the moment.
How many men are stationed here?
Well, we have at the moment just at 9,000.
All quartered on the post, I assume?
Yes, sir. They all live here on the post.
Funny. I haven't seen more of them.
Well, most of them are in training classes here and there.
Training for what?
Electronics, field repair, basic weaponry.
All right. Ask your driver to stop a minute, General. Come with me, General. Let's walk.
All right. You can just follow behind us in the car, Wicker.
Right, sir.
All right, General. Now, what's the score here?
I beg your pardon?
Fort Powell encompasses some 8,000 acres. You're drawing $61 million to operate this place. You have a rail spur with bright, shiny rails running behind a row of warehouse buildings. You say the buildings are empty, but those rails say they're in constant use. Rails rust fast unless trains run over them constantly. Now, don't try to kid an old recon pilot, General.
Well, we had that track replaced just a short time ago.
And where do 9,000 soldiers park their cars, General?
Senator, I don't like being evasive.
Then don't be. Another thing you see from the air, General, is power lines. You're drawing enough power in here to light up a city. What are you doing with it? What is this post, General? What are you doing out here that takes $61 million?
Well, Senator, that's about the size of it.
Just a training base. That's sort of repair depot.
Yes, sir.
Time to time, you get in a load of gear that has to be fixed. You start in the warehouses, and you the man repair the stuff and leave it again by rail.
That's about it.
Must be kind of a dull life for you, General.
We can't always pick our assignments.
No, that's true, Mr.
Captain, you might as well take us back to headquarters.
Yes, sir.
Wait a minute. You know what I'd like to do?
What? What's that, Senator?
I'd like to follow this big, wide asphalt road that runs beside the railroad tracks. Where does it wind up, anyway?
It just goes out to a storage area, old ammunition, fuel, that sort of thing. Not really very much to see.
Humor me anyway, General.
Well, all right. Captain, let's do as the Senator asks.
Yes, sir.
You can see a lot of things from the air, General. Of course, you know that. You're an old combat man.
Actually, no, I'm not.
Oh, is that so? Well, you get to noticing things if you ever did low-level reconnaissance flying. Like this road now. It gets a lot of very heavy usage, right?
Well, I suppose you'd say it does, yes.
Oh, it does. In fact, I'll tell you something else about it. It's used by trucks carrying something very heavy outbound, away from camp. I would guess that they come back light. How am I doing?
Well, that's excellent. Very good, isn't he, Wicker?
He's sharp, General. See, sir, the trucks using this road are mainly loaded with fuel and ammo, and they go out and unload out here at the dump, and they come back empty.
That's right, Senator. You sure put your finger right on it.
Well, a guard and a big wire gate. Bet that's lonely duty.
Good afternoon, soldier.
Good afternoon, sir. Your destination, please?
Perimeter tour, about 20 minutes.
Yes, thank you.
I'm very impressed by your security here, General Clothes.
Senator, that's been my specialty, you might say.
Yeah, interesting. Say, what's this up ahead? A tunnel?
We'll take the perimeter road, Captain.
No, this road we're on. What does it do? Go down underground?
That's right. The dump is all underground.
Must be pretty big. Say, I'm curious about something else. Those power lines. They all feed down into the fuel and ammo dump?
That's right.
Huh. This must be the most sophisticated dump in this man's army. Why are we turning off the road?
We're just going to drive you around the perimeter of the dump, Senator.
No, wait a minute. Let's go have a look at it.
All right, Wicker, just drive us down the entrance ramp.
Right.
Say, we're going right down into the ground, aren't we? Dark as night down here.
This road terminates in a big steel door, Senator. There, you can see it in the headlights, see? That's it.
Blast proof?
Everything proof, Senator.
Building B-2000.
Right.
Pretty big inside?
Gigantic.
And then the power lines feed the lights and air, I suppose.
Right.
Well, as long as we came all the way out here, might as well have a look inside.
Senator, that I can't do. I'm sorry.
What?
I'm sorry. This area's off limits.
Tell me that again, General.
I said this area is off limits.
Even to a United States Senator?
I'm afraid so, Senator Varney.
Even to the chairman of the Defense Budget Committee?
Yes, sir.
You do realize that I can call the president and get into this building. That if I have to do that, it's going to be embarrassing for you, General Clove.
I'm very sorry, Senator. I have my orders.
From who?
From the president.
Listen. You listen to me, Cloves. Just what are you people trying to pull out here? What's going on in that building that's costing the taxpayers of this country $61 million?
Senator, I can't tell you.
There we go with part one. That was a quickie of Crisis Building B-2000 with the scratchy-voiced senator. Sounds worse than I do.
Yeah, them senators feel they have to know everything, you know?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Stop.
They'll save
people.
You $61 million and then $82 million.
Yeah, stop probing people. It does feel like Area 51 kind of stuff. Especially when they're probing
the
my taxes.
The tension music. was a Dark Shadows outro bit of music. Dun, dun, dun.
Cool.
That was some Dark Shadows.
Yeah, they must have been using it from various sources. We had the Bernard Herrmann stuff the other week, and now we got Dark Shadows music.
Yeah. I finally made connectivity. Go ahead, Dave.
I just wonder how much they paid to get the rights to that stuff.
Yeah. Or if they did.
Yeah. This senator sounds really squeaky. I don't know. Or inky. I don't know. Whichever works. But
either way, I wouldn't want him as my senator. That's all I got to say.
There you go. As an ex-military guy, I don't like people that pull rank, which means they're trying to kind of look down their nose at you with rank. But this guy doesn't even have any rank. I'm a senator.
The only rank he has is body odor.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Is it the local barbecue shop with a coupon? Yeah, I don't know. Oh, guess what? Less than the first half or first quarter of this, and I already have a new moral, so I'm all set.
See that, gang? His morals are ever evolving.
I tell you.
I still want to hear the original one, too, though.
Yeah, let's get a twin spin. That'll be good.
Yeah, okay. Okay, we'll do one. This doesn't fit, and then this is the one that does.
Why not? See that, folks? We're giving you something to look forward ahead of time. Sneak preview to later on in the show. But
there you go.
Let's go ahead and wrap up Crisis. Building B 2000 with Scratchy Senator Boy.
Senator, I'm sorry to be so evasive, but if you'll just understand that it's a matter of security.
Who the devil do you think you're talking to, man? I'm a senior senator. I control the purse strings for your very job. I'm a brigadier general on top of that. Nobody has a higher security clearance than I have. Nobody.
I understand that, sir.
As a representative of the people of the United States, I'm expected to know where every penny of their defense dollars are going. Now, frustrating me in my attempts to discharge my duty is a very serious matter, General. Very serious. Now, I'd like you to reflect on that. And implying that I am a security...
Senator, I'm not implying anything of the kind.
Then take me down into that building B-2000.
I'm sorry, sir.
Where's your scrambler phone? Do you have one in your office?
I'll get it for you. Just slip the receiver.
I know how to use it, General. You may think you're doing your duty, General, but... hello? Priority A1. This is Senator Peter Varney calling the President. Yes, I'll hold. Maybe you think you're doing your duty, but you're going to learn that you don't withhold anything from me, General. You got that?
Sir, if the President will permit me to do it, I'll be only too happy.
Hello? Yes? Oh. He is. All right, give him this message. Tell him Senator Varney is on a fact-finding mission for the Defense Budget Committee at Fort Powell, Nevada. And I'm being denied access to certain facilities here. That's right. The CO is Major General Cloves. Tell the President I want confirmation of my clearance by voice to General Cloves. Got that? All right. You do everything the hard way, General.
I try not to, Senator.
You can still change your mind about building B-2000.
Senator, you're asking me to compromise my oath. I'm only doing my job.
General, I'm only doing my job. My job to buy this country the strongest possible defense with the fewest possible dollars. And if you can't show me some justification for this place in the overall defense picture, I'm going to see to it that it comes off the inventory so fast it'll make your head spin. Now, that's my job. All right, Close. Let's talk reasonably, okay? Now, obviously, this whole camp is a cover for something you're hiding down in that hole in the ground. Now, if you have a weapon system down there, do you think I'm going to question the expenditures?
No.
Of course not. But as long as you prevent me from seeing where the money's going, you know it could cast suspicion on you. Don't you see?
It's no use, Senator. If you only knew what's at stake, you...
Well, I can tell you what's at stake. Your job, General.
It's a damn sight more than that. The security phone. General Cloves. Yes, sir. Right here. Senator, for you.
Vonnie here. Good evening, Mr. President. That's exactly why I'm out here, sir. I wonder if you would permit me to put General Cloves back on the line so he could hear you personally assure him that I am authorized to be admitted to any building on his post. Building B-2000. Yes. What? Sir, you and I have often been on opposite sides of the fence on a lot of things, but I always believed you respected the... Mr. President, may I respectfully suggest to you that this sounds like a cover-up? Yes, yes, Mr. President. Here, General, he wants to talk to you.
Mr. President. Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Thank you, sir. Yes, I understand. Good night, Mr. President. Senator, at 0900 hours tomorrow morning, I'll show you the inside of building B-2000.
Senator Varney, it's 8 o'clock.
Good morning. Good morning, Captain Wicker. I'm ready.
I hope you slept well, sir.
I did. I always do. Say, sometime early this morning, I thought I heard a jet land out on the strip. A big one.
It did, sir. We have another visitor.
Good morning, Senator. We have a surprise for you. I'm sure you know the Secretary of Defense.
Senator?
Well, that was you I heard coming in this morning.
I'm sorry that we awakened you.
What brings you here?
I am here on the President's orders to see you.
Well, I must have turned over a really big rock.
You did, yes.
You going to accompany me out to building B-2000 this morning?
Only if you continue to insist on seeing it.
So that's it. Well, Mr. Secretary, yes, I continue to insist.
I avow. But first, Senator, I must warn you that there will be some very serious consequences if you see it.
Well, let me tell you, Mr. Secretary, there'll be some serious consequences if I don't. Now, last night, I used the phone in my quarters to call my chief aide back in Washington. And I filled him in on all that's been going on out here. Now, he's ready to break the news to every network and wire service if I'm denied access to that building. Now, do you have any idea what that'll look like? Wait till Anderson gets hold of that.
You should never have done that, Viney. That was most unwise. Nevertheless, it is done. It is my duty to inform you that the consequences to you personally will be serious and permanent, if you...
Mr. Secretary, we're wasting the taxpayers' time. Let's get out to building B-2000.
I am sure that you'll recall the Manhattan Project.
Certainly. The code name for this country's first atom bomb project.
That required a blind appropriation from Congress.
And there was also a war on, and we had our backs to the wall. We knew the Germans were trying to build one, too. You building an atom bomb...
Ah, here we are.
The door operates in a handprint code.
A moment, please, General. Senator, I must warn you that when you come out of this building, you will never be the same again.
Open the door, General.
Malfunction and was forced to land. It was 1971. More of their ships arrived shortly. We agreed to provide an environment in which their crews could repair such ships and replenish them for a continuation of their missions in the galaxies.
It's a spaceship.
So we had no alternative, you see. We either provide them with a supercooled environment, high-pressure carbon dioxide, and with the electrical energy they require for replenishment, or they cause another energy blackout, as they did once before.
Let me down in there.
Don't be ridiculous, Senator. No human being can live in their atmosphere.
Those are humans running around down there.
Don't be too sure, Senator. You've seen enough. Come now, they don't like visitors.
It's blackmail. You're feeding them our power, our energy. When we could come in here with one ground-level H-bomb.
No, Senator,
you're giving them our energy.
Senator, we are giving them an Earth base in return for the Earth.
This is the biggest farce I've ever heard of. It's blackmail. Blackmail.
All right, gentlemen, take it.
You just wait till I've... What is this? Clothes?
Into the ambulance, Senator.
Ambulance? What's this for?
Just make it easy on yourself.
I don't need an ambulance. Get your hands off me!
Well, here are your press releases. They correspond to the official release the president will give.
Bethesda again, huh?
Poor devil. Senator Peter C. Varney has been admitted to Bethesda Naval Hospital for observation following a breakdown suffered while on a routine inspection of a military base. It was not known...
Please, Captain, if you would drive us back to camp, you'll be able to read it all in the papers tonight.
Bogus.
You have heard Building B-2000, which featured Douglas Young as Senator Varney, Terry McManus as General Cloves, Jim Kelly as the Secretary of Defense, and Merrill Mayle as Captain Wicker, and was written and produced by yours truly, Jim French.
Good job, Jimmy. Jimmy.
Somebody play that creepy flute.
That was Crisis Building B-2000. All right. We're going to have to get rid of somebody here.
The funny farm.
All right.
They're coming to take me away. Hee hee ha ha. Woo-hoo.
There we go.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you. Hold on here. There we go. We made that go away. Nice. Yes, sir. Somebody kind of... We got nailed in the chat by somebody being naughty and nasty. So we apologize profusely while I kind of cleaned things up. Cleaned them up just in time. Just in time for... House Radio proudly presents Gar's Moral of the Story, which may or may not fit. We'll find out.
You can't get lost if you don't know where you're going.
Okay.
That was the one that fit.
It was all about dreams.
Yes, it was.
Here's the one that doesn't fit.
Okay, the one that doesn't fit is up.
Yeah,
right again, dude.
Hey, we want to welcome Edgy Robotnik to the chat.
Yes. roll the moral.
Hello, Edgy.
Oh, that's right. We have a backup moral, do we not?
Yeah, the backup. The one that doesn't fit.
Okay, here's the one that doesn't fit. House Radio, totally confused. Now, proudly resents another Garless Gar's Moral of the Story with Gar so it's not really Garlos. Wow.
Just what every mother likes the least. A proof of life. Twice. That fits with the last one.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Okay. Say goodbye to that one.
They will like it.
It was all
people
right.
That haven't heard it will be, huh? Yeah, okay.
There you go.
Proof of life twice. Good grief.
We may have twice as
wow,
many
I can't wait.
As we have radio programs.
Can't wait for that story to come. Wow.
Oh, maybe next week.
Maybe next week. Oh. Maybe not.
Maybe next week. Maybe not.
Who knows?
Okay. All right. Well, if that wasn't suspenseful enough, wink, wink.
Speaking of suspense, we were being held in suspense. We missed you there, CW. Glad to have you back.
Yes.
Thank you. Good to be back. Thank you. If I do say so myself, I'm always worth the wait. Uh-huh.
Right.
That well said and true fact.
Yeah, and I was going to quip, hey, CW, how's your back? How's your front? But then it's me too, so we can't do that.
Hashtag me too. Hashtag me too.
Hashtag me too.
A whole lot of that hashtagging going on.
Everything's okay, Gar. That's it. It's all good.
Wow.
I know.
Got a whole lot of radio. A whole lot.
Speaking of suspense.
Yes, let's.
Oh, Gar,
change
that one too. I changed that one too, Gar. No,
yeah.
No, I didn't.
No!
No, I didn't change that one too. No.
We'd tell you, but it's a classified secret. Which, by the
way,
is the title of our episode tonight from Suspense.
Yes.
No less.
How clever is that? How clever is that?
I'm segueing my ass off.
You have a donkey?
Well, let me try that. Let me try that. I have to lose some of mine, so, you know.
Yeah.
You have having donkey? What?
Yes.
Air date?
What is the air date for classified secret?
It's a secret, and then it's not. November 22nd, 1955. Blah, blah.
Number 645.
And now, tonight's presentation of radio's outstanding theater of thrills, Suspense. Tonight, we bring you a story of a cross-country bus and the safety of a nation that rode in it. We call it Classified Secret. So now, starring Parley Bear, here is tonight's suspense play, Classified Secret.
Day.
Yes.
Kids sure know it's getting on to Christmas. Look at them.
I've been watching them.
Yeah. Kind of glad, though, I haven't got any.
Oh?
Well, you know, world conditions, things the way they are. Who wants to bring a kid into it?
I suppose so. Do you have a match?
Oh, sure. Here you are.
Thanks. Have you got it? What's the matter?
Oh, you don't look the type. I almost hoped you weren't.
Have you got it?
With me? No. But I'll take you to where it is.
All right. The money's in tens, twenties, and fifties.
In the sack with the groceries?
Yes, I thought it would be safer that way.
Yeah, I guess so. How much?
10,000.
Ten?
Well, that's what you agreed to.
Mm-mm. I said 20.
I was told 10.
They made a mistake then, didn't they? Sorry.
What are you trying to do?
Nothing. Not a thing.
I was told you were with us.
I am. But I get paid for it, too, don't you?
Like, can't sit here any longer. We might be watched. Will you please give me...
Sorry, it was a misunderstanding.
But...
Unless you want to take me to the head man. Maybe he can straighten it out.
I haven't got any instructions for that. How can I reach you?
Well, as of about 2 hours from now, you can't. I'm leaving town.
Will you give us 24 hours? It'll take that long.
I'm sorry. If you can't pay what I want, there's somebody else who will.
I'm going.
Okay. So long. I was sitting on a bench in a little park in North Hollywood, California. The late fall sun was warm, and for a change, there wasn't any smog in the air. I watched the woman I'd never seen before walk off down the path. She was headed for the avenue and some cars parked beyond the trees. I thought how nice it would have been if she were just a woman in the park, nothing else. I waited until she was out of sight, then I got up and walked away in the opposite direction. I got the bus at the Hollywood station. I had a train ticket in my pocket, but with the new development, it looked safer to ride the bus. Just before we pulled out, a girl climbed aboard and came down the aisle looking for a seat.
Excuse me, is this number...
18.
Oh, thank you.
Let me put your case up.
Oh, thank you. I was afraid I was going to miss it.
Yeah, I know how it is. I settled back and watched the city drift away into desert country. As buses go, it was pretty quiet. There was a 6 or 7 year old kid with his mother a couple of seats forward, but he dozed off almost as soon as we got running. I took a look at the girl sitting next to me. Oh, not in the way you might think, but because in my business, you get to learn to look at people. You never know who it might be. She must have felt me watching, and she lowered the magazine she was reading.
Would you care to look at one of these?
Oh, well, that's nice of you. I always forget to buy them.
This one's a mystery. I don't usually read them, but on a long trip, they kind of pass the time away.
Yeah, they do. How far are you going?
New York.
Oh, that is a long trip, all right.
I'll say. I haven't been back for 10 years. But it's changed.
I guess so. I read the mystery well into Arizona. And when I finished, it was beginning to get dark. The kid up ahead was awake and hungry. There was a feeling of expectation on the bus as we drove into the first night of travel.
Did you enjoy it?
Oh, yeah. It was fine. Thanks a lot.
What was it about?
Spies. They're real exciting.
I like spy movies sometimes. But I think they do so many of them. You know, you read about it in the papers all the time. I don't know. You'd think people would get sick of it.
Yeah, I guess you're right.
They're exciting, like you say. But I bet it isn't really like that.
Yeah, I doubt. Well, say, my name's Charlie. Charlie Rader.
Oh, how do you do? I'm Julie Spaulding.
Hi.
That kid sounds as hungry as I am.
Yeah. We ought to be stopping soon.
I hope so.
About 15 minutes later, we pulled up at a restaurant terminal and went in for food. I watched for any new passengers who might be getting on. I didn't see anybody, and as soon as I finished my sandwich and coffee, I sent a telegram to New York, then got back on the bus. The girl, Julie, and I seemed to be hitting it off, and it was pleasant enough to pass the time. After we got rolling, the kid up ahead decided to sing himself to sleep. It was like a crooning over and over again, the same song, the same few notes. I guess it put everybody else to sleep except him.
It makes you sleepy, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Reminds me of when I was a kid. I used to do that. Kids are funny.
How?
I don't know. I'm going back to New York for my sister's wedding. She's getting married next week. She says she wants lots of kids. I don't know.
I know what you mean.
Mind if I ask you something?
I don't mind what.
Are you married?
No.
I don't mean it the way it sounds. I'm always interested in trying to guess about people. Now, I would have figured you were a married man with maybe two or three kids.
No, I'm not married.
I hope you don't think I'm nosy.
Oh, no.
Well, that kid singing fixed me. I'm going to take a nap. Good night, Charlie.
Good night. I must have dropped off, too. And when I woke up, she had her head on my shoulder. A lock of her hair was falling over her closed eyes. And then I knew something was different on the bus. Somebody on the other side of the aisle, watching.
Excuse me, mister. Have you got a match? I'm clean out.
Oh, sure. Just a minute. Here.
Thank you.
No, keep them.
Oh, fine. Thanks a lot.
Hey, you got any idea where we are?
No, I'm not sure. I got on at Flagstaff an hour or so back. Oh, boy, I envy her. Wish I could sleep like that. That's your wife?
No.
Oh. Say, that's rude. But taking your matches and not offering you a cigarette.
Oh, that's okay. I don't want one now, thanks.
Say, I want to tell you something.
Oh?
There's a lady in the seat behind you. I think you've met her before in the park. Right? We brought her with us to identify you. But she gave us a pretty good description back in L.A.
Good for her.
Yeah, so well, it's going to be a nice trip. Nothing like traveling with people you know, is there?
Oh, nothing like it.
Don't suppose you've got any reading material you could let me look at?
How about a mystery? It's a spy story. Pretty good.
No, I was thinking of something else. I think you know. Something more, say, scientific. I'm very interested in airplanes. Jet motors.
Sorry. He looked across at me, smiling, pleasant. And anybody watching, it was nothing more than the casual conversation of two strangers brought together by the night and sympathy of loneliness. Then he leaned back, and reaching inside his jacket, brought out a small automatic, which he kept very carefully hidden from any eyes but mine.
I always carry this with me on a trip. You never know.
Oh, I knew all right. If they couldn't buy what they wanted, there were other ways. That's what he was telling me. And I saw in the man's smiling face that I'd never reach New York unless I killed them before they killed me.
You're listening to Classified Secret, tonight's presentation in radio's outstanding theater of thrills. Suspense.
Hey, Harlow.
9 solid years of applause. That's the wonderful record of popularity that belongs to Arthur Godfrey's Talent Scouts, now in its 10th year. Enjoy the fun with the inimitable redhead this Monday night on most of these same stations. You'll hear promising young performers compete for a golden chance at fame. Enjoy the suspense as you wait to hear which entertainer will be singled out by the studio audience. Don't miss Arthur Godfrey's Talent Scouts this Monday night at the Star's address.
There you go. Do that. Listen in.
There you go.
You're just in time.
That would be inimitable.
Yes.
Babe, did Pauly Bear have a strong footprint in radio?
Oh, yes. Tremendously strong foot. For one thing,
yes.
He was Chester on Gunsmoke for 11 years. He was all over CBS, as was, I think we heard Howard McNear was the guy next to him. He was Doc on Gunsmoke. And he was all over the place. And, of course, he was Floyd the Barber on Andy Griffith. And Pauly Bear was the mayor of Mayberry on Andy Griffith.
Oh, whoa. Okay. I didn't know that about the mayor of Mayberry. Wow. Okay.
Yep. Yes, he was.
Wow. He was in a lot of stuff.
Very distinctive voice, Pauly Bear.
He was even around long enough that he was in several of the Sears / Mutual Radio Theater.
Oh, okay.
Programs.
Okay. Yeah.
So.
When I picture Chester in my brain, I don't think of Pauly Bear. I think of...
I don't either. You're right.
The other guy.
He is nothing like I envisioned him in real life.
And I've been tainted with the television series. Right.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Dennis Weaver? Yeah, no.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah, it just doesn't fit at all.
No.
Pauly Bear has one of those distinctive voices, I think.
Right, but like Gunsmoke, how y'all doing over there? I don't see Pauly Bear being able to. I'll have to go listen to Gunsmoke. I don't know how he did it. Get her done.
God. I finally heard the last of that. Get her done.
Get her done. only on Gunsmoke. Tune in. That would have been a whole different Gunsmoke, wouldn't it? If it had get her done.
A friend of mine was watching Bonanza and whatever streaming network that was presenting it put a warning, a trigger label. There are some outdated cultural references in this show. Please be warned.
Whoa. Okay.
Yeah. Bonanza.
Bonanza. Yeah. Well, they had an Asian butler.
Hopsing.
That could have been.
Hopsing, yeah. Hopsing.
They
could have been it.
I'm sure they had a few Native Americans in there that were probably Italians with red paint on their face.
Then they had Little Joe, and that was no fair talking about his anatomy like that, you know?
Exactly.
No, that's
not body shaming. All that body shaming.
Not right at all.
There's probably a Me Too moment in there somewhere, too.
Where's CW?
She had to step away.
Probably
she said so. And
shaking her head, just wondering what the hell happened to her.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Why are you here?
I'm listening to Suspense, and I'm sitting here, and I'm reading my moral. I'm going, this doesn't fit. It's like, it's the moral for the CBS Radio Mystery Theater tomorrow that I did. I put it in the wrong place. So
Then that's perfect for tonight, Gar. I think you should be mislabeled morals night.
Yeah. This is going to be mislabeled morals night. And I came up with a new moral on the fly for this one, so that'll work.
But when you catch that fly, that's the important thing.
Yeah.
I can always catch my fly. They're everywhere. They're everywhere.
Keep your fly to yourself there, that young man.
That's right. Yes. Me too!
Poor
Me
CW!
Too!
Poor
Me
CW! I think she's having trouble connecting. She's there, but she's having trouble getting in.
Ah.
Maybe if we take her out and put her back in. Let me do that once.
Okay.
Okay, now we'll bring her back and see if she's there. CW, are you there? Okay, she's not there.
She may have gotten
but she's
otherwise engaged, too, because she's a a gal about town. So let's go ahead and get a chance to get back by wrapping up episode of Suspense, Classified Secret.
And now, we bring back to our Hollywood soundstage, Parley Bear, starring in tonight's production, Classified Secret, a tale well calculated to keep you in suspense.
Julie and I had breakfast somewhere in New Mexico. The woman from the park and the man who carried the small automatic sat in a booth while we ate at the counter. I'd thought about things most of the night, and I decided to tell the girl, not too much, but enough so that she might be able to help. And I knew I'd need some help.
Coffee's pretty good here.
Yeah. Cigarette?
No, thanks.
Julie.
Yes?
I want to tell you something.
Oh?
I don't want you to turn around and look. Just pretend we're talking about the weather, the coffee, anything, but listen.
Well, sure, Charlie.
There's a couple sitting in the booth behind us. They're spies.
Hmm? Oh, you.
I'm not kidding. I can't tell you much, but as you love your life, you will believe me.
Oh, you're kidding. Spies?
Don't turn around. Smile and just listen.
But I...
They're trying to get hold of the plans for a new jet motor. It's faster than anything anybody else has got.
You are kidding.
No, I'm not.
How do you know? Well, how do you know about it?
I'm working for the government.
FBI?
Well, in a way. But now I need you to help me.
Me?
They think I've got the blueprints, the plans, and they're going to try and get them from me.
But can't we get the police?
No.
Well, but why?
Because we're trying to get the head man. And if those two are arrested, we'll have to start all over again. They think I'm working with them. But I got tough about the money they offered, so now they're going to try and get rid of me and get the secret for nothing.
Did they follow you from L.A.?
Yeah, they got on during the night in Flagstaff.
All right, folks, let's go.
Well, I don't see... Well, what can I do?
Just stick with me. I'll explain at the next stop. We can't talk about it on the bus because she's sitting right behind and he's across the aisle.
Listen, are you pulling my... No. No, you're not, are you?
I'm not. We went on through New Mexico and the pink rock and desert. We talked a lot of nonsense, and after a while, I could see she was getting back to the idea that I'd been kidding, especially after the man with the gun introduced himself as Mr. Hutchinson and started to talk about fishing. It was about half an hour before our lunch stop.
Now, you take some of that Northern California country, so you talk about trout and steelhead. Oh, boy, I tell you.
My dad used to take us up, my sister and me. He'd take us up to a place in Maine.
Oh,
gee. Dad always wanted a couple of boys, I guess. When he saw what he got, well, he figured it wouldn't spoil his plans anyway, so he took us fishing every summer. You should have seen the fishing up there.
Oh, I'd like to someday. Yeah, I'd like that. How about you, Mr. Rader? You like fishing?
No, not much.
Ever try it?
A little, when I was a kid.
You ought to take it up again, if you have time.
Well, I might do that.
You know, if a man had a little money put away, he could do a lot of fishing. Oh, boy, that's a way to live. Have about, oh, say, $10,000. Go all over the country, fishing, no work, no worries. How's that sound, Miss Faulding?
What a life.
It would take more than $10,000.
Oh, I don't know. Ken's better than nothing. Say, have you ever been up on the road?
They went on talking, and I did some thinking. He was smarter than I'd thought. Looked like a nice, average guy and behaved like one. That's one thing I'd learned. The more ordinary you can be, the less you're going to be suspected. And these people had it down to a science. It wasn't going to be easy because I was going to have to convince Julie all over again. I could see that. My chance didn't come until that evening after our dinner stop. By that time, the woman in the park, who went by the name of Lisa Nyland, Hutchinson, the girl and myself, all four of us were buddies. We'd pulled up over the Colorado border. There was some kind of trouble up ahead, a slide or a wreck. And the driver told us we'd have half an hour or so before we went on.
You want to take a walk for a while? There's a cafe a couple of hundred yards back.
Oh, it's a cafe.
I'll give you a call when we're ready to move on.
Here, watch your step, Julie.
Oh, thanks.
Well, kind of nice to have an extra leg stretch at that. How about some coffee?
Oh, that'd be nice. Charlie?
Oh, I don't know. I'd like to have a look at the valley down there. We might walk up the dirt road away, get a pretty good view, the sun setting off.
Oh, you're romantic, eh?
Sure, why not?
Oh, Charlie.
Okay with you, Lisa? You feel romantic? Want to see a valley and the sunset?
That'd be very nice.
Okay, then, let's go.
Girls, women, be careful. There are snakes.
We walked away from the bus and up a narrow ranch road. About 100 yards up, there was a curve, and around it a stand of trees. And when we got there, you couldn't hear the sounds from the highway any longer. It was peaceful, and it was very pretty. I knew that Hutchinson was delighted about the suggestion. It was going to give him his chance. But he made the mistake of playing it a little too clever. Kept his game of small talk going a minute too long. We'd got to the top of a cliff overlooking the valley when I stumbled on a rock and fell a few steps behind before they had a chance to stop. And when they did, I already had my gun out.
Hey, what are you going to do? Target practice?
No. You two stay where you are and keep your hands behind your head. Julie, get over here.
Charlie, are you sure? They seem...
I know what they seem. Now, look, I don't want to do this, but it's you or me. You should have made the right deal in the first place. I can't let you go, you know that.
We might still make a deal.
You had your chance.
We've got the 10,000. Now, how about waiting until we get to the next town? We'll have the rest of it telegraphed out.
I make mistakes, but not that kind.
If you told us what you wanted, we... might have been able to get the 20,000 for you in Los Angeles.
Turn around, both of you.
Oh, wait a minute. We're all in this together. We all want the same thing. You figure you can get more money from the people in the East. Okay, give us a chance to get it for you. We're in contact with them.
Turn around.
Well, they give us our orders. What difference does it make? Look, you shoot us. What do you think they'll do? They won't let you get away with that. They'll kill you.
Charlie, you can't just shoot them. Turn them over to the police. You can't just shoot them.
Be quiet.
He can't tell the police. Julie, he's with us. Only he wants money out of it. And he thinks you'll get more from the head man in the East.
Turn around, and I'm not going to say it again.
Charlie, don't. I know you've got a duty, but you can arrest them. Please, you could still.
I told you to be quiet.
Arrest? Listen, Ray, dear. You're not going to... You're not going to kill us over 10,000? Boy, that's murder. Even if...
Miss Nyland dropped instantly. Hutchinson held his middle for a second and tried to keep his balance. I shot him in the back of the head. I knew he was dead before his body slipped to the ground. The girl just stood next to me, her hands tightly covering her mouth. She was shivering. I took a look out across the wide valley. The sky was turning purple.
I've never seen anybody killed before.
I'm sorry.
Couldn't you have arrested them or something? Couldn't you? Did you have
to? I had to. They wouldn't have stopped at killing both of us if they'd had the chance.
What are you going to do? What are you going to do now?
I've got to get the money for evidence.
What are you going to tell the driver? I'll ask where they are. Charlie? Driver's going to wonder where they are. Charlie, what are you doing?
I've got to put them over the cliff.
Oh, no. No.
I've got to.
Oh, no, you can't, Charlie, not her. No.
I right. Come on. We got back to the bus. Neither of us said anything about the two we'd walked off with. I guess nobody had seen us together, and after waiting around for another half hour, the driver gave up.
I'll drop that baggage in La Junta. Better notify the police, too.
Screwy, all right.
Okay, folks, sorry for the delay. You better go back to your seat, mister.
Sure. I was starved when we pulled into the depot at La Junta. I'd already made up my mind to lay over and take a detour on another bus. The girl wasn't going to be able to keep quiet much longer, and I had to get rid of her. We got out of the bus, and two men were standing alongside waiting.
Just a minute, please.
Hmm?
We're special agents for the FBI. Search him, Larry. Just gun and money. Where are the other two?
The other two?
They're dead. He killed them.
Oh. We'll take those plans now, Mr. Rader, and don't do anything silly. There are four more men covering you.
Okay. It's in my shoe. You want me to take it off now?
Please.
All right. I've got terrible balance. Mind if I lean on you?
No.
Thank you. Here we are.
Thank you, Mr. Rader. This isn't worth anything, really, you know. We planted it in the factory in L.A. for someone to steal. What we wanted was to be led to the top man in New York, and when you sent that wire to him from Arizona, we got him.
Uh-huh.
We were worried about you, Julie, when you didn't call us from Albuquerque.
I didn't get a chance. He was with me all the time.
Is she... Oh, my. Is she... Are you playing spy, too, Julie?
I'm working for the government, Mr. Rader.
She's been following you since you stole the plans.
Well, you fooled me. I bet you fooled Hutchinson and Nyland, too. It won't matter to them, though, will it? Well, that's the way it goes.
Take him away, will you? I had to watch you murder those two. I don't want to hear him laugh about it.
Come on, Rader. We've got a car waiting.
Sure. So long, Julie. Nice to have met you.
Suspense, in which Parley Bear starred in tonight's presentation of Classified Secret. Be sure to listen next week for another presentation of radio's outstanding theater of thrills, Suspense.
Ah, there's the Suspense March.
Suspense is produced and directed by Anthony Ellis, who also wrote tonight's script. The music was composed by Leith Stevens and Lucian Morwick and conducted by Wilbur Hatch. Featured in the cast were Virginia Eiler, Charlotte Lawrence, Richard Beals, Howard McNear, Charles Seal, and Jim Nesser. Listen Friday night for the 21st Precinct. The hard-hitting 21st Precinct police will give us another graphic view of big city protectors at work. There's danger every minute, human interest every second. When Metropolitan Police try to unsnarl personal problems, hunt the missing, solve the crimes, protect the public, sometimes from itself. Remember, Friday nights on most of these same stations, hear the 21st Precinct.
Yep, it was a classified secret that didn't go too far. So we bumped off the senator, now we got this guy.
Yes.
And I bet we can learn something. Erie House Radio proudly presents Gar's Moral of the Story.
story.
Sing it with me. Spies on the bus go round and round, round and round.
Round and round.
Either that or Jupiter Beans tell no tales. You know, that was
I was waiting for the next verse. Yes, I was.
Yes.
Well,
yes.
You could always, we could always write it for the next Erie House song.
There you go.
Oh, no.
The wheels on the hearse go round and round. Round and round.
And up and down, slippery fly, international spy, la la la.
Spy on the bus goes bang, 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 bang.
Bang, bang. Speaking of spies, you know we lost spies. You know we lost one of the original men from Uncle, Mr. McCallum.
Yes,
I don't think we mentioned that. Yeah, what a shame.
Yeah,
we did not mention it, and we should have.
My growing up time, I was right at the end of Man from Uncle, but I did see him on the NBC short series, The Invisible Man. He did.
He was very good in that. And more recently,
he did that one.
He was on. Yep, he was on. What was that? NCIS.
NCIS. Yeah, NCIS.
Yes.
Oh yeah.
He was Ducky on NCIS.
Ducky.
Oh, that's right.
Ducky.
Oh, and if anyone was keeping count, $10,000 in 1955 would be worth $114,000 in 2023. A little bit of chump change.
Well, you can't retire on that.
No, you can't, but you could go fishing.
You could go fishing if you like.
You said you can go fishing. It was in the story. You could go fishing. And we're like, okay, yeah, I guess you could.
Yeah, that's why I'll be working for the next 100 years, nonstop, never ending.
Yeah, right. Yeah, exactly. The other twist on that, you don't need the music, is Deep Ravines Tell No Tales was something I was tossing around. All on the fly, I was sitting there going like, Dave, I'll send you the moral for tomorrow's, which I had listed as this one, which is actually for CBS Radio Mystery. There it is. Okay. Yeah, we'll do that. I'll send that to you. Let's watch it. Dave, that big, well, no, we'll do it in the after party. That's okay.
Okay.
No, on to the next. Times are running.
You're
trolling Johnny
Dallas.
The man with the action tactic spent account.
Exactly.
That's right.
Yeah, the change that come up. Hold on, I'm trying to find a David McCallum soundbite. And I'm failing miserably. I have a David McCallum song, but I did not say Parma.
But remember.
Why don't you look for that during the first segment, Dale?
There
you
go.
Because then I lose my clock. So we'll just go ahead and forget about that.
Okay.
Here, I'll just share it for you, with you, because of you, to you.
Okay.
Anyway, it's from Outer Limits episode The Sixth Finger.
The cops are coming at him,
and he says, the greatest line ever, your ignorance makes me ill and angry.
I feel that way all the time.
Exactly.
My teachers used to say that to me all the time.
You know what? I will try to dig it up. I will use my very brain and do some timing so I don't lose the outro of part one of Johnny Dollar called The Top Secret Matter.
Mm-hmm.
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 Which is a
mm-hmm.
lead-in to I wonder when it was first broadcast.
Carry the 7. Original air dates, March 4th, 1962.
Episode 779.
Johnny Dollar. Johnny, this is Len Walker at Surety Mutual Insurance.
Out there in the wild and golden west?
Yep. Still holding down a desk out here in San Francisco.
How are you, Len? What goes these days?
Goes off is more like it, Johnny.
Oh, what's that supposed to mean?
3 neat, tidy little explosions that have cost us well over $1 million apiece.
Wow. What kind of explosions, Len?
Rocket fuel type of stuff.
Oh?
Yeah.
Where?
The Bascom Development Company. It's hidden away along the coast, a few miles south.
Bascom, hmm?
So if you want to grab your space suit and pop on out here, well, who knows? Maybe they'll oblige by sending you aloft on their next blow-up.
You make it sound very attractive, Len.
I'll tell you this, Johnny. If you can find out the why of this and put a stop to it, we'll pay you enough to let you fly high and wide and handsome for a long time to come.
Now you do make it sound attractive.
Well, then?
Okay. I'll start practicing on the first plane I can get.
The CBS Radio Network brings you Mandel Kramer in the exciting adventures of the man with the action-packed expense account, America's fabulous freelance insurance investigator,
yours truly, Johnny Dollar. Expense account submitted by Special Investigator Johnny Dollar to Surety Mutual Insurance Company San Francisco office. Following is an account of expenses incurred during my investigation of the top secret matter. Expense account item 1, $199.27. That covers a taxi out to Bradley Field, the hop to New York, and from there a one-stop flight on out to the West Coast. At New York International, I thought I was the last one aboard before takeoff. But just as the big jet started taxiing out to the runway, a well-dressed gentleman with a well-stuffed briefcase plunked it into the seat beside me.
Well, looks as though I just made it.
By the skin of your teeth, and you better fasten your seatbelt because... Hey, George!
What? Why, it's Johnny! Johnny Dollar!
In person?
Well, this is an unexpected pleasure.
Well, how's the prosperous businessman?
Just fine, and you?
Couldn't be better. You on your way out to the coast, too?
No, just going as far as Chicago to our main plant and office. Oh, it's been a long time, Johnny.
It sure has. Tell me, are you still a vice president of that big chemical outfit?
I certainly am.
Oh, that's good. You're just the man I want to talk to. I want to ask some questions.
Oh, why?
Hasn't your company got a hand, like all the others, in the liquid rocket fuel racket?
Certainly has. Or I should say had.
Mm-hmm.
Well, right now we're in the process of trying to turn down a contract.
No kidding. Well, how come? Well?
Well, I shouldn't have mentioned it.
Oh, top secret?
No, not quite. Not exactly top secret. As a matter of fact, it'll hit all the papers in just a few days now, so if you want to find out what it's all about... But now, wait.
Yeah?
Didn't you used to have a top security clearance?
I still have, from OSI, CIA, CIC. You want to see my credentials?
Why not?
Okay, anything to get you off this big Mysterioso kick? Here, here, and here. Okay?
Okay.
Now, what's the big secret that's about to hit the headlines?
A new solid rocket fuel.
Well, I thought a lot of companies were working on that, had even developed some of it.
They are, and they have. But, Johnny, we now have a radically different one that was developed in our place through sheer luck.
How do you mean?
Well, there's a young East German fellow, a scientist. I don't even remember his name.
Mm-hmm.
Anyhow, he has enough degrees in chemistry from European universities to choke a horse.
Yeah.
Came to us for just a run-of-the-mill job in one of our labs. But a few months ago, entirely on his own, he came up with this solid fuel formula, handed it over to the company Lock, Stock, and Barrel.
Mm.
Big boys checked it. Now, thanks to him... Well, Johnny, it looks like we'll be light years ahead of the hammer and sickle competition.
That's good.
And that's about all I can tell you about it.
Whatever you say.
Now, why'd you tell me I'm just the man you wanted to see?
Because maybe you can tell me something about a company out on the coast that is also in this field.
Oh, Johnny, out there must be hundreds of them, ranging from the big important ones like Air Search and Rocketdyne to little one- and two-man operations. Now, which is it?
The Bascom Development Company is somewhere near San Francisco.
Bascom, huh?
Yeah. What do you know about them? Well?
Nothing.
You sure?
No, Johnny, I'm afraid I never even heard of them. Oh, you're a lot of help.
I'm sorry.
All right, what do we talk about now? Politics? Religion? Women? Sex? Or something sensible like fishing? The way those jets traveled, there wasn't time to talk about much of anything before George got off the plane in Chicago. By the time I had an afternoon snack and prepared to settle down for a nap, we circled and landed at San Francisco International. Item 2, 470 for a cab into Len Walker's office. That's across from the Sheraton Palace and my pals at KCBS.
Now, where do you plan to stay while you're here, Johnny?
At the Huntington up on the hill.
Fine. So grab yourself some dinner, get a good night's sleep, and you can take off first thing in the morning.
Take off again?
Mm-hmm. I'll have a rental car sent around to you there at the Huntington.
Len, aren't you going to tell me first what this is all about?
Bascom Development Company.
Yes, you said that much on the phone.
Well, now look here on this map.
Yeah?
Now, you go down here on 101, then cut over to Route 1, then down the coast to here, a few miles south of Big Sur.
Wait a minute now. If memory serves me right, that highway is chiseled out of the side of a lot of cliffs that rise up out of the blue Pacific.
Right.
So what can be there but a lot of rocks and trees and the ocean?
A little well-hidden side road that goes down through the trees to a leveled-off spot on the very edge of the ocean.
Hmm.
That's where you'll find the Bascom Development Company. Only for security reasons, it's been made to look like a cluster of summer homes.
You say they've been having explosions?
3, Johnny. And as a result of them, 3 deaths. That's where we've had the payoff through the nose.
Why?
Well, the men, they were chemists or engineers he had working for him, all had insurance that Bascom paid for. A cool million apiece.
And he was the beneficiary?
Half to him, half to the families of those men.
Oh.
It's common practice where people of great importance to a company are concerned.
Yeah. Tell me, just how much do you know about the explosions?
I think you'll do better by getting that from Bascom himself. I told him you're on your way.
Oh?
Yes.
Okay, Len. Whatever you say. Item 3, 1280 for cocktails and dinner at the Fleur-de-Lis. After all, I was on expense account. Why not live it up? After a good night's sleep at the Huntington, I took off. After passing through San Jose and Salinas, I cut over through Monterey and Carmel and hit California's wonderful one, Highway Number 1. It took me through beautiful wooded hills and forests and then along the edge of the sea. It's a narrow, tortuous road with nothing but high cliffs on the left and a sheer drop-off on the right, sometimes for several hundred feet to the ocean below. And it is a beautiful, beautiful drive. At Point Sur, that's S-U-R, means south. The cliffs are almost perpendicular, so the highway goes a bit inland for a stretch. And then I found the sharply slanting little side road that Leonard indicated on the map. I had to make my way down it in low, low gear. And there at the ocean's edge was the group of... Well, Len was right. They did look like harmless summer cottages. But there was an armed guard at the entrance gate. I showed him my clearances. He made a phone call, then directed me to the second building down the road. However, as I started to pass the first one, a small, white clapboard sort of building, it looked like, I heard a sharp, strange, crackling sound, like timbers breaking. I looked up. The side of the building seemed to bulge out momentarily, and then...
Your ignorance makes me ill and angry.
No.
Well, there it was. There it was.
Best thing that ever came out of David McKellum's mouth. Yes.
And I was.
Your ignorance makes me ill and angry.
No.
Sorry.
I want a T-shirt with that saying on it.
Yeah, CW. Yeah. I know for a fact that at Office Depot,
you can get printer-ready paper and make your own T-shirts iron-on.
Yeah,
and you got,
done that for a couple times for our shows, yeah.
And you got to have the picture of futuristic David McCallum from that episode of Six Finger with that.
With the big head?
Yes.
Big, huge
big head?
Yeah.
Yep, and pointy ears. Yeah, futuristic Dave.
Yeah.
Yep. We have our very
have
own
to look
futuristic
into that.
Dave.
Yes, we have a Dave.
Mm-hmm.
He's not very
so
futuristic,
Dave,
though.
Were you named after David McCallum or Dave, the astronaut that Hal tries to throw into outer space?
It's funny. There was a story of how I got to be Dave.
oh, jeez.
Actually, a guy who was working with my parents who didn't have a lot of money, he offered to pay for the entire hospital stay for my mother if they called me Alfred. Luckily, they did not accept that. My father wanted me to be Donald Jr., and my mother said at that point, being about 6 months present, there's one too many Donalds in this house already, and so I became David.
There you go.
Wow. What a saga.
I just always thought Dave was named after a giant killer, but
Dave, yes, everyone knows the famous Dave the Giant Killer.
Yeah.
Oh no, Dave.
Right.
Hey, don't do
that's
that.
That's right.
There you go.
Yeah. I think you were around before Davy and Goliath, though.
Yeah,
you would predate them.
He was
maybe
they
were named after you.
I also predated Outer Limits, so, you know.
He was named, he was named by Cheech and Chong. Dave's not here, man.
Dave's not here.
Let me in, Dave.
No, I think Dave predated them, too.
The only thing so far I found out the only thing I haven't predated is the dinosaurs. Come on.
Yeah, there you go.
Oh, great. Stop it, because I'm older by a few months than Dave.
Yeah.
So you ride the dinosaurs to school, too. Okay, no problem.
Oh, yeah. Yep.
Oh,
it was a pterodactyl named
Dale
Turu. It was a pterodactyl named Turu. Yep.
Dale the dinosaur.
Oh, man, I had to ride on the brontosaurus bus, you know?
Oh, there you go.
Ah, yeah.
The brontosaurus. Wheels go round and round. I don't know.
I rode the short brontosaurus, but I digress.
Oh, boy.
That was politically incorrect. I'll give
that
letters.
That was politically incorrect.
I will
I
will be getting letters from
diminutive
dinosaurs.
I know. We have to get back to it, but it's not fair that we get punished for saying stuff about the short bus when that's what they were used for.
You're not allowed to speak the truth. It upsets people.
There you go. There it is.
You're not allowed to point out the obvious. It upsets people.
It upsets people.
Yes.
People need to stop being so upset.
I agree. They should listen to more Erie House Radio and eat ice cream.
There you go.
And all would be well.
Eat ice cream. Lots of ice cream. Lots
and
of
laugh
ice cream.
At all our jokes. Yes.
And lots of Erie House Radio.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
All right, let's wrap up Johnny Dollar, the man with the
Johnny Dollar
action-packed expense account, I believe it is. As we conclude, the top secret matter. Damn it.
I reacted purely instinctively, shoved hard on the accelerator, but by the time that explosion really took hold, I was almost past it. Nonetheless, my rental car rolled completely over with me inside. Shook me up a little, but otherwise I was okay. From a building down the line, several intelligent but very angry-looking men came running over, hauled me out as roughly as possible, then shoved me unceremoniously into the next-door private office of Mr. Horace Alderworthy Bascom. Bascom, a slight, gray-haired man of about 60, sat quietly behind his desk, holding a gun on me in a way that indicated he could and wouldn't hesitate to use it if it became necessary. Until I produced my credentials and told him why I was there. Then he dismissed the others, shoved the gun back into the drawer of his desk,
and Sims?
I'm sorry, Mr. Dollar. We're all of us a bit on edge these days. And no doubt Doctors Harvey and Welcome and young Franklin thought that you had caused the explosion there in Unit 1.
Doctors, Mr. Baskin?
Of science, chemistry. Best I've been able to find.
Oh, I'll tell you this about them. They not only have brains, but muscles.
They're all experts in the field of explosives.
Are they?
The best.
I wonder after what just happened.
You were very fortunate, Mr. Dollar. Had that explosion occurred just a fraction of a second earlier...
I wouldn't be sitting here, would I?
Your body and the remains of your car would have toppled over the edge of that narrow spot beside Unit 1 and ended up on the rocks some 200 feet below. No question of it.
I don't doubt it. But now, aren't you concerned about what's happened to that Unit 1? From this window, it looks like a shambles.
Yes, like a few others that have gone before it.
Do you want to take a look and see if you can figure why it blew up? I know I do.
I'm afraid it would take far more scientifically knowledgeable minds than ours to determine the cause of this latest misfortune. And as you can see, Dr. Welcome and some of his aides are looking it over very carefully.
Well, I still want to look.
Of course. And I sincerely hope you can accomplish something. Thank heaven this time there was no one hurt. We've lost three, Mr. Dollar. Three of our finest chemists during the past 3 months.
So I understand.
And each of them, I'm convinced, just when he was on the threshold of a solution to this tremendously important project of ours.
Just what is this project, Mr. Baskin?
Creation of an uncommonly efficient semi-liquid rocket repellent that will, I am convinced...
Semi-liquid?
Yes. Yes, an almost unbelievably powerful gelatinous substance with all the energy of the complicated liquid fuels and the stability of a solid.
Hmm.
If I can develop it, Mr. Dollar... It will be the greatest triumph in the history of space rocketry. And I will have made it. I alone will hold the secret of it.
And yet you're not a scientist.
Well, in the purely academic sense, no. But without my aims and my ideas, without my money to provide the means for their experimentation, these men I employ could accomplish nothing. And that means that... What's the matter, Mr. Dollar? You are all right, aren't you?
Oh, yes, sure. But as long as this last explosion just happened, I'd like to get out there and see if we, or maybe your Dr. Welkin, can pin down the cause of it.
Oh, yes, yes, of course. Believe me, if anyone can determine it, Welkin can.
But Welkin couldn't, nor could I. In spite of Mr. Bascom's help in combing through the ruins, and we really combed. A lot of theories got aired, but none that led to any definite conclusions. Then, early that evening in his quarters, I talked at some length with Dr. Welcome about not only this, but the three previous explosions.
No, no, I don't think so, Mr. Dollar. It's simply that some of the materials, the components used, are so unstable, so highly volatile, and shock susceptible that... And yet every possible precaution is taken, not only in the handling, but in the storage of them.
Mm-hmm.
So unless someone were setting them off deliberately, as you suggest might be possible...
An awful lot of people don't want to see our national rocketry program succeed. Don't you forget that, Doctor.
Yes, but someone here in this closely knit organization... No, I can't believe it. Another thing, Mr. Dollar.
Yeah?
Williams, Thornbury, and Brenner.
Are those the three who were killed?
Yes. Now, certainly you don't suggest they deliberately caused the explosions that caused their own deaths.
That's hardly likely, I guess.
Not a bit likely. And, Mr. Dollar, each of them was entirely alone in the laboratory when the accident occurred.
You sure of that, Dr. Welkin?
Oh, absolutely.
Tell me, was there anybody in Unit 1 this afternoon when it went off? Or anywhere near it?
No, you were the only one near it.
And you sure of that?
Absolutely certain.
Mm-hmm. Tell me something else, Doctor.
If I can, yes.
How close are you fellows to this rocket fuel?
Well, Mr. Dollar, I believe that Williams and Thornbury and Brenner were very close to it, each in his turn.
Mm-hmm.
Mr. Bascom and a couple of the other chaps and I felt they had found it. But now, of course, we'll never know. So, all the rest of us can do is keep on trying.
You don't sound very confident.
Well, sometimes it's very discouraging. And with the cutbacks in salary we've been obliged to take... But it's a challenge, and challenges are what make a profession like ours worthwhile. They and the opportunity to serve this country.
Who sparked this whole idea in the beginning?
Oh, I understand it was a young German chap that Mr. Bascom found somewhere abroad.
What?
Yes.
What was his name?
Kellerhals. Hans Kellerhals.
Kellerhals, I see. All right, Dr. Welcome.
Gentlemen?
Oh, Mr. Bascom.
Well, have you found anything?
Anything to indicate what might...
No, it doesn't look as though we have, Mr. Bascom. Not a thing.
Oh,
what's more, I've suddenly remembered that I'm supposed to be back in San Francisco tonight, so I'll have to run. If, that is, my car is still usable.
I understand it isn't, but if you'll wait a moment, I'll bring mine around.
Oh, I appreciate that.
But your investigation here...
Oh, don't you worry. I'll be back.
Well, I certainly hope so.
San Francisco? No. I drove Mr. Baskin's car out to the highway and headed south to the first filling station I could find. And there, after parking out on the far edge of the highway, I ran up item 4, $21 even in telephone calls. And what I learned from them, figuratively, blew this whole case wide open. My first phone call was to George Langley, the man I'd met and talked to on the plane, at his home in Chicago. Thanks to his information, the second call was to the young German chemist who developed the solid rocket fuel that they were about to announce. You guessed it. His name was Hans Kellerhals. What Kellerhals said to me about his reasons for having left the Bascom Project to work at one of America's big, established, reputable chemical firms told me more than I'd even hoped for. And then, to top it all... Well, let's face it, it was mighty lucky for me that I hadn't taken the drive up to San Francisco. Because when I stepped out of the phone booth there at the little gas station...
You know, I sure hope you don't need any more of my small change, mister.
No, that was the last call I had to make, and thanks for the use of the phone.
Well, don't belong to me, it belongs to the phone company.
Well, thanks anyway.
Say now, maybe you want to drive your car over to this side of the road and fill her up, maybe?
Might not be a bad idea.
So why you parked along that edge over there, so close to that drop-off, I'll never know.
Hey, look! Look, you see?
I see, all right.
One of the tires must have went, you see? Well, she's rolling on over down the cliff.
One of the tires? Oh, no.
What'd you say?
Didn't you hear that little explosion, see the way that car sagged over?
Well, yeah, I guess I did.
It must have had a time mechanism.
Huh?
If that happened the way it was supposed to while I was tearing up this crooked highway on the way to San Francisco, nobody would ever have known. Listen.
Yeah?
Is that your car over there, beside the station?
Sure.
Look, here's $100 for the use of it just for tonight, okay?
Are you kidding? Sure it's okay.
Okay, then, give me the keys. Luckily, the same guard was on duty, and he let me through the gate to Bascom's setup without question. And more important, without announcing me. In the darkness, then, I slipped the lock on the door of Bascom's office, went inside, pulled down the shades, put on a light, and looked around. And I finally found it. A small switch under the sill of the window facing out to where Unit 1 had been. And if those wires on it had led underground to some kind of a detonator there in Unit 1 this afternoon...
Mr. Dollar.
Better come in, Mr. Bascom.
Yes, I certainly will.
Just sit down there at your desk anywhere.
Of course, if you like. Did you break your way in here?
You, want to tell me why, Mr. Bascom?
Why? Why what? Afraid I don't understand.
I want to know your reasons for the explosions.
Well, you're implying that I was responsible for them, Mr. Dollar?
Entirely.
And you honestly think that you can prove a wild assertion like that?
Yes, I honestly think I could. Otherwise, instead of sitting here talking with you, don't you think I'd be out and around investigating further?
Yes, I suppose you would.
Let's look at some facts. Like the explosion this afternoon that nearly killed me because you knew I was coming here. The switch I found under the windowsill. Well?
Yes.
And your help in combing through the ruins?
Help?
Or careful misdirection, so I wouldn't find the detonator you'd rigged up, nor a trace of the wiring from that switch.
Of course.
Those cutbacks in salaries. You needed money, didn't you, Mr. Bascom, like all that insurance you collected?
Yes, very true.
And something you said this afternoon. I and I alone will hold the secret of this fuel. So when you thought that Williams and Thornbury and Brenner had it, to keep it for yourself, you killed them. Is that about it, Mr. Bascom?
Just about, I guess. And all because of a young chemist I brought over here.
Hans Kellerhals.
Yes. I was supposed to be over there in Germany on a vacation. Actually, it was only in order to establish contact with him and hope that I could capitalize on his knowledge of missile fuels. Took a lot of time, a lot of money. Most of it spent in bribes to East German authorities. But I finally got him over here.
I see him.
He was so glad to be free for the first time in his life, so grateful for an opportunity to work in this country, that he was willing to agree to anything.
Which means what, Mr. Baskin?
I was to have complete control of anything he might create and develop here.
And what happened? Did he find out you were in this thing only for personal gain?
Yes. So he came in here one morning and told me that he was leaving. That he would keep his word, however, and relinquish claim to whatever he had developed here. My demand, he put that in writing. So I let him go. Like an idiot.
Why do you say that?
Well, I thought he'd completed the fuel, that I could go ahead and produce it and sell it and make millions. Millions, Mr. Dollar. And without having to share with him. But I was wrong. He hadn't finished.
Mm-hmm.
I hired other men, the best that I could find from all over, in the hope that they could carry on from where he'd left off. But all it did was cost me money. Money, money. And the only way I could think of to get enough to keep going was by collecting that insurance.
By committing murder?
Yes, I know. The first one was very difficult for me. But the second one, I meant another $500,000 to carry on with. And the third, because all the time I kept hoping to get that rocket fuel. I suppose I should have known. I never would. And my misdeeds would catch up with me.
Yes, you should have known. Are you ready to leave, Mr. Baskin?
I don't have to, Mr. Dollar.
Oh?
Here in this open drawer beside my hand is a .38 revolver. Loaded.
What are you thinking of, Baskin? For you or for me?
Making a difference.
Would it really solve anything?
No, I guess it wouldn't. Shall we go?
It's almost unbelievable. I mean, the length to which some people will go to promote their own selfish interests at the sacrifice of others. Don't they know that somehow, sometime, there has to be a showdown? Expense account total, including repair charges on the rental car and the trip back to Hartford, $993.70. Yours truly, Johnny Dollar.
Now here is our star to tell you about next week's story.
Next week, a tale of the problems, at least one of the problems, that go with the owning of a gold mine. Join us, won't you? Yours truly, Johnny Dollar.
Yours truly, Johnny Dollar is written by Jack Johnstone, produced and directed by Bruno Zerato Jr., music supervision by Ethel Huber. Johnny Dollar is played by Mandel Kramer. Also featured in our cast were Melville Ruig as Bascom, Court Benson as Dr. Welcome, Frank Campanella as George Langley, and William Mason as the gas station attendant. Be sure to join us next week, same time, same station, for another exciting story of Yours truly, Johnny Dollar. Art Hanna speaking.
Thank you, Art. And time to maybe just increase our knowledge just a tad. Erie House Radio proudly presents, at last, the final moral of the story from Gar.
With a name like Hans Kellerhoff, we just knew he'd be a big bang in business. There you go.
That deserves a polka.
It does.
How about that, Dave? We do have extra time left.
Oh!
Dave? What?
Dave?
Yes, there I am. Hey, it helps when I take my mute off, you know?
It helps. It does.
I was just saying that deserves a polka, but a polka in the nose is probably more like it.
Hello.
Hello, lady.
All lady. Yeah, I love my cowbell.
Hey, somebody say,
I need more cowbell. I need more cowbell.
Do you? Funny. Need more cowbell. That's right.
Need more accordion.
I can take my shingle, take my fine kill bossy. You can take my feet doggy, but give me back my
kishka. Who's gonna kishka? Maybe the greatest song ever written.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
Maybe.
What,
maybe.
One of the things I loved
you
about
can
my Judy. Yeah, guys. Go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say you can take my pierogi, but not the kishka.
Not the kishka.
That's
terrible.
That's worse to live by.
A song glorifying crime.
Is it? Really? Oh, it's feeling the kishka. Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
Yes, yes. It's glorifying crime.
One thing I always loved about Judy Tenuta was her use of an accordion.
Yep.
Hey, somebody say top secret.
Top secret.
Oh, speaking of top secret, once again risk life and limb, but this time for the Weirdness Really Bad Movie, to do an interview with a secret agent.
What?
And
say.
This is how it came out.
Welcome back to another episode of Weirdness Asked, where we dare to ask the question that no one else asks, that perhaps no one should ask. Maybe you'll remember our last show where we asked the question, if Sister Susie did sell seashells by the seashore, did she report it to the IRS? Or maybe you missed that one. You know, we all think we know what the Secret Service does. We think that the Secret Service is there to protect the president. We think the Secret Service is there to investigate counterfeiting. But what does the Secret Service really do? Today, in a secret location, we're going to talk to an agent of the Secret Service. Where did he go?
I'm right here.
Right where?
Right here.
Hey, you're really good at hiding.
I should be. It's part of my job.
So tell me, how long have you been an agent of the Secret Service?
I've never been an agent of the Secret Service.
You've never been a Secret Service agent?
No, sir.
But I remember you telling me before we went on the air that you're an agent of the Secret Service.
I never said that. I said I was an agent of a Secret Service.
Well, of a Secret Service. Oh, so what's the name of your secret agency?
I can't tell you.
Well, why not?
It's a secret. If I told you, it wouldn't be a secret now, would it?
I guess not. So tell Mr. Can you tell me your name?
No.
Why not? It's
a
secret. I know. Well, why is your name a secret?
You wouldn't want my family to be injured or killed now, would you?
Well, of course not. Wait a minute. Do you even have a family?
Maybe. Maybe not.
So, you know, can you at least give me a hint what your secret agency does?
You want a hint?
Please.
Okay. My agency is in charge of all domestic and international secrets.
Cool. Hey, tell me a secret.
Okay. Your middle name is Eugene.
Hey, you know, that's pretty good, but that isn't really a secret. Come on, tell me a secret.
You really want a secret?
Yes.
It could get you in trouble.
I'll risk it. Come on, tell me.
Okay, hand me that mic.
Okay. Really?
You bet your life.
Wow.
Oh!
Hello. I tried to warn him.
Poor Dave.
May I rest in peace.
Complete with cowbell.
Yes.
Oh. There we go.
That was a good one, Dave. Enjoyed that. Thank you. Blah, blah. Two blares for me.
Two blares for the price of one.
There you go.
We wouldn't want you to be blairless.
Or in the immortal words of Facebook, label.
Or Hans Kettlehopper instead of Hans Kellerhouse. How did I get Kettlehopper?
You must have been thinking about popcorn.
I don't know.
Kettlehopper and Kellerhouse.
We got time for a wheel or perhaps a little music.
Yeah,
we do.
Yeah, we do.
Ooh, how about a tune? How about
Let's do a
tune?
Yeah. Maybe two. Let's see. Anybody got any
Maybe
money?
Maybe a double spin even. Yeah. I don't get paid till next week. Somebody else better tip in.
You got a coin, Gar?
Sure, toss one in.
All right, there you go. I'll put that one. This one's party.
As you are my love, as you are my love, say you'll always be. Though the years go by, my heart will ever sigh. You're the love for me, dearest, always be as you are to me. You're my guiding star. Love you are to me.
Howdy.
My love you'll ever be. Though you're near or far, it's so clear to me why you're so dear to me, as you are, as you are.
Everybody dance.
I am dancing.
Love you are to me.
I'm dancing.
My love you'll ever be. Though you're near or far, it's so clear to me why you're so dear to me. As you are, as you are.
93 KHJ double play.
Okay.
There's someone down the street we'd love to have you meet. Come on, put on your hat and coat. You won't believe your ears, the best we've heard in years. This man's a gentleman of note. He plays those mean old spoons on all the latest tunes. He'd sooner play the spoons than eat. At every party, does he get a hand? The jitterbug, roll up the rug. He plays the boogie-woogie like a baby grand. You pass it in your sieve. You get the itchy feet. When he gets hot, you gotta dance. Do his click, clack, clickety clack. Boy, does he click. The king of loons, Professor Spoon, a regular lunatic.
Trouble keeping up with that one. Oh, oh. I tapped
all
that whole song. I do good tap on radio, let me tell you.
Yeah.
Especially since he's wearing slippers. Yeah.
Yeah.
That makes it tougher.
Yeah, but I put thumbtacks on the bottom, and it hurts.
And it hurts. And it feels so good. Yeah, there you go.
It hurts so good. Baby, baby, hurts so good. More secrets tomorrow. CBS Radio Mystery Theater, Secret of Crow's Nest, and the return of Story Lady. Yay! She's got a secret rhinoceros to tell us about.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. Not a hippopotamus, but a rhinoceros.
More Me Too stuff, I'm sure. Okay.
Yeah, probably.
Let me tell you about my secret rhinoceros.
So what's happening right after our show tomorrow, Gar?
I don't know, because my internet is maybe not working so well. I don't know. I've been.
I would loan you my internet, but I don't think the mail would get it there in time.
No.
Yeah.
I only know that if what was in place worked correctly, everything would be fine.
Well, yeah, there's always that.
You know.
If things were working, you wouldn't need repairmen.
Yeah.
How that goes. So, well, we want to thank our live chatters, Duck, Northwest Media, Fogs Bane, good old Bob. Thanks for joining us. And we had a couple, or at least one weirdo I had to get rid of. And then Edgy Robotnik was here for a while.
Yeah.
The hashtag had me too. Or something.
Yeah. I'm going to try to work on Horrible Heart starting out of the goal at Twitch. I don't even remember what it is. Net, gov, com, TV, something.
I don't know.
Tomorrow, 8 p.m.
Gotta
Eastern
run.
Time.
We got to run.
Yep.
We'll see you tomorrow.
The castle lights are growing dim. There's no one left but me and him.
And her.
When next we meet in Frankenstone.
And me too.
Don't come alone. Can you dig it?
I know.
Ouch. Door hit me right in the...
Right in the...
Yeah, it's right in the...
Yeah.
Now, I must have missed something. Did you have some sort of near-well in the chat room?
Your mic is breaking up, my dear.
Yeah. You need to stand on one leg and wave a chicken feather.
You got a chicken feather?
Use
an ostrich plume.
Yeah. Or just get a bucket of Colonel Sanders. That works, too.
Yes.
Yes.
Wrap it.
Ooh, that's worse.
It's pinging. Yeah. It's...
Roll down a window. There we go.
Wrap.
Oh, we're
foil.
Getting
it. Wrap some foil around
underwater.
Your phone. Wrap some foil around your phone. Yeah.
Now she's on auto tune.
Reminds me of that first talking computer. I like my coffee glass.
Yeah.
Remember that?
Yes.
Oh, good God.
How would you like our coffee today? We're getting the auto tune of CW.
CW has magically turned into R2-D2.
Yes. Oh, my gosh.
Maybe she's swearing at us and Blog Talk is like editing.
Yeah. Yeah, maybe she's getting filtered out. I don't
know. She has every right to swear at us. She does. Yeah.
True.
Oh, my gosh.
We deserve it. But, Jenny Dollar was good. I still like Bob Bailey better, though.
Yes.
He's the best. Mandel Kramer was probably second best.
She's still trying. She's still trying. Almost.
It's almost. It's R2CW. That's what it is. Yeah, there you go.
Hello?
There you are.
Yes!
Hey, you're
there you are!
Almost there.
Okay, stay where you're at. Don't move.
Oh.
She moved.
She put her foot down. There you go.
Wow.
Yep.
Then there's always that direct connect thing. But anyway.
Yeah, there you go. I needed a laugh, and this is, this was it. Oh.
Yeah. I hope you're not as frustrated as I get when I'm underwater going.
Yeah, that.
All you need is a short cord for that one. Wait a second.
Yeah.
Here. I'm going to another hashtag Me Too moment here.
That's right. Short cord Dave.
Yes. I think both of us have tried to strangle ourselves in the course of doing this show.
Yes.
Oh,
she's back? Are you back? I guess not.
That's the only problem. It's right now. If she hung up, she'd be gone.
No,
I still see her connected.
She's still connected.
We see a connection. I don't know.
So
did you guys watch I Spy as a Ute?
I did.
I did too.
She's still there.
Spies were in. She's trying so hard.
Oh God.
Bloop, bloop. Now you sound like the bloop on Lost in Space.
Bloop, bloop. There you go. Bloop, 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 bloop. yeah, we had Get Smart, I Spy, Man from U.N.C.L.E., Girl from U.N.C.L.E. I mean, we had all kinds of
Mission Impossible.
Mission Impossible. Yeah.
And Secret Agent Man. Don't forget Secret Agent Man.
I didn't watch Secret Agent Man. I almost heard you there.
There you go.
GW.
And Lancelot Link, Secret Chimp.
I like my coffee black.
She's gonna replay this and go, "I hate you guys."
She didn't hate us before.
Trying to be nice.
Wait till you hear this in the archives, CW. Just wait.
Yes. Yes.
We're laughing with you, though.
Oh, man.
She's gone. Oh, she's gone.
Doggone
it. Oh,
I like my copy black. I am leaving you losers.
Do you blame her? Do you blame her? I don't.
No, I don't blame her. I don't blame her.
Oh, that was so
I know she's frustrated.
I would hate me.
I know she's frustrated. We didn't help any gentlemen.
No,
we should be ashamed of ourselves. We're not, but we should be.
I am always
ashamed
of myself.
I'm sorry. That was just auto-tune, R2-D2, first computer voice. Oh,
and the bloop.
And then
the
finally,
the bloop
from Lost in Space. Yeah, so.
Bloop. Paladin does that sometimes. He'll it's like not quite a bark, and he'll just go bloop, bloop.
Yeah, your dog has some weird noises for a collie.
Oh my
I never
gosh.
Heard Lassie do that.
You have no idea the range of sounds this dog makes. It's hysterical.
Wow.
He does these weird groans to get attention.
I mean, my dog had a thing, like if I wasn't paying attention, they go, woof, woof, woof. You know, they're trying to, you know, it's like, what do you need? Woof, you know.
Yeah, a little huff.
Yeah, oh. But yours are like,
he's
oh
trying to learn to speak, I swear.
I swear, yeah.
Yeah. No, they're highly intuitive dogs. They really are. I can't tell you how impressed I am with this breed, because I belong to a few pages that, are dedicated to collie owners and stuff and collie lovers. And everybody pretty much, you know, they all have their own little idiosyncrasies, like all dogs.
Right.
But generally speaking, they're pretty mild-mannered, but they're loud. They love to greet people loudly. They have a very powerful, loud bark. Playful, gentle with little animals and little kids, and just generally friendly. They can get shy, but this one gets spoiled, and we try to socialize them, you know, by having them meet people and other animals in the neighborhood and stuff. And he got to play with an opossum one night.
Did the possum enjoy it?
It calmed down. Like at first it froze up, and then it saw he wasn't really doing anything. And the reason he wasn't doing anything is the possum wasn't doing anything. If it would have ran, he would have went crazy and chased it.
Right.
Like he does with other vermin in the area. But the possum's like, yeah, I'm not fast, so running isn't going to work. I'm going to sit here and think about maybe playing dead or maybe letting my stink out. Because they have a stink, not quite as bad as a skunk, but it's pretty foul.
Yeah.
And you didn't do none of that. So you made friends with the
possum. One thing about opossums is when they play dead, there's another aspect of them playing dead. One is they will defecate, fall in it. That way they smell dead.
Yes. Yep.
So that's what that is.
Yeah, the death, death
that's
stink.
Yeah.
The death stink.
Yeah, well, that would be the feces.
Those things that swim in the sea, the little feces?
Uh-huh, yeah, the little feces.
Swim in the sea.
I have seen raccoons and possums at the same bowl eating, and it's just like, wow, because if you take raccoons and put a bunch of raccoons together, they're like constantly bickering. But I've seen cats and possums. I've seen raccoons and possums, squirrels, possums, raccoons.
There's a guy in Canada. He puts up these videos, and he brings out buckets and buckets and buckets of
hot
food.
Dogs? Yeah.
Maybe hot dogs, all kinds of food, and he gets swarms, literal swarms of raccoons.
Raccoons.
And he
feeds
them
all. Yeah.
I mean, there has to be several dozen. I'd hate to clean off his back deck when they left, man. Oh.
Get the pressure washer. Gets rid of it. Yeah, it's not horrible. Yeah. But yeah, that would be my parents. I once counted one night, and we had over 80 raccoons out in the courtyard, and I was like, wow.
Jeez.
It was just a sea of black and brownish fur all the way to the tree line.
It'd be funny to see all those little eyes peeping at you behind their masks.
Oh, yeah, because if you take a picture, you see all these, like, reflective little circles.
Yeah.
Crazy. And it was at night, too. I don't know if I still have that photograph or if it's...
Yep.
Maybe it's
I love, except for the mosquitoes this year, I'm loving living by the woods. I absolutely love it.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, being here in Florida, we get a lot of the mosquitoes and just
gators.
We got gators, but they don't fly as high as the mosquitoes. If you get a spray on with a DEET in it, mosquitoes are not a problem. You spray down your shirt, spray down your arms, the back of your neck.
We try to do more natural things.
Citronella doesn't work unless you've got a forest of them. I mean, it takes a lot to really have citronella work. The candle.
Yeah, I don't want to do that because of the dog. You put all that in the air he's running around in.
I never had a collie. I had a purebred mutt. It was very intuitive of what I wanted and did the opposite. That was what my dog
did. Well, that's palatable sometimes, too. Yeah.
Mine would blow me away. My dog would blow me, the both of them, because there were times where I could swear they're answering the question, or they're doing something like, wow, like you said, intuitive. Just wow.
All of them are couch potatoes. They love to climb up on the couch. You really can't. It's hard to keep them off the couch. You can, but we have an old crummy couch, so he's welcome to it.
Right. There was a point in time where I had a couch. I don't have a couch now, but back in time I had a couch. And my dog was never allowed on the couch. And then one day I was like, I don't care. Get up here. And then after that, you know, forget about it. It's a couch dog after that. You know, it's like, couches are comfy.
Yeah. Once is all it takes. Once is all it takes.
Yeah.
Yep.
But until I gave him permission, he would not get on the couch. It was crazy.
It's a good dog. When about 3 weeks ago, the kids were over and they were both on the couch. And Paladin gets up, climbs up next to my son, pushes him. He starts shoving his butt up against Michael. Finally gives up, lays down, and puts his head in Michael's lap and goes, like, yeah, I'm frustrated. He's so funny.
Yeah.
Hilarious character. I love this dog to death.
I would love to find a house and relocate because the next step after that is to get a dog immediately. But
he's making me healthy. I've lost a good 5, maybe 7 pounds since we got him.
From walking?
From walking more often, yep.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, man, they're great.
Or even playing chase the ball in the backyard. He's like, you know, you got to chase him because he loves to be chased.
It's chase the dog. Chase the dog, chase the ball, and avoid the landmines.
You know, he's real good with that. He goes around the border of the property, and it leaves us a lot of room to run without worrying about that.
Every time my dog would go out, I'd go out with him because as soon as he'd finish, I'd shovel it up and put it in a plate and bag it and get rid of it. So the backyard was always clean. I never had to worry about that, but Yeah, that's I know, because if you don't do it, and then just going out into the backyard, you know, who wants to step in that, really? I mean,
yeah, but you know what? Honestly, we don't have a lot of people out there, and it's a big yard, and he never goes more than like 2 or 3 feet from the fence. So all we got to do is walk the perimeter to scoop the yard. So we do that 2 or 3 times a week. He's a big dog. Otherwise, it'd be 3 or 4 days if he wasn't such a big dog. But
we got to do this.
He's a big guy.
Mine was over 70 pounds. And then the little dog was a little bit under 70 pounds, I think. But you know, my bigger dog, he was like 80 pounds. He was a good-sized dog.
A little under 70 is not a little dog. That's still a good size. That's a good hunk of dog.
It's a good hunk of dog, but his head was below my knee. And then the other one that I consider big, his head was above my knee. So when I was walking, you know, the head was up there. I could just put my hand down, pet him.
Yeah.
The other one I had to bend down a little bit. But yeah, they were both stout dogs, and they weren't overfed. I mean, one had open feeding, and he wasn't overweight, and the other one had measured feedings, and he wasn't overweight. They were just big dogs. And I liked it. It's comforting to know, and this is kind of a bad thing, but it's comforting to know when you're walking your dog and people see you coming that maybe they step to the side because it's like, oh, big dog. It's like,
yeah,
good.
Oh, yeah. When I lived in
don't
the
have to contend
city,
with
I,
those people.
There were a lot of break-ins in our neighborhood when I lived up in Cleveland proper, and I had a husky dog who looked kind of threatening, where Pal looks just beautiful. But I remember walking one day, and these hoodlums are walking by, and one of them goes, "Got a wolf?" And I'm like, yes, it is.
Yeah. The only downside to that is I'm not going to let my dog stay out overnight in the yard. No way.
No, I don't do that. I don't believe – don't want to own an outside dog. I like an inside dog.
No. I want to know that he's inside, that he's safe. Or if he is outside, he's safe in a protected area.
He's
safe, but
he's not going to cause any problems either that might get you in trouble.
Right. Well, that too. I had a problem. Oh, yeah. Because I had some neighbors, they jumped the fence to get something that was in my yard. And it's like, no. I'm sorry. After it gets in my yard, forget about it. Don't come in here, because they can sit there and they can get litigious on your dog bit my kid, and it's like, where was your kid in your yard? The hell, okay? No.
I know.
But then they can actually press suit to the point where they'll destroy your animal.
They could also be polite and say, "Hey, I made a mistake. Could you throw that back here?" So they don't.
They could. Yeah. That would be the thing. Come knock on my door.
That's the way we grew up, you know what I mean? If you encroach, you ask permission to get whatever. Sorry, I got my ball on your roof, you know? Can I get that?
Yeah, no. If I was a kid and my ball fell into a yard with a dog, all right, that's it. End of that ball. Move on with your life.
We have just donated a ball.
Yeah, there you go. Now the dog, that is a new paradigm of house, dog, plus ball. There you go. My gosh.
Maybe that dog will remember me someday.
Not in a good way. Don't go in their yard. It's not your yard. Don't go in there.
But you gave him a ball.
Yeah, I did that once.
Yeah.
I did that once. The dog said, took a bite out of me, said, "Tastes like chicken." You know?
I installed a 5-foot-tall chain link fence in the back. Kids still jumped over the fence. I'm like, it's a 5-foot freaking fence. So then I put up a partition fence. It's all wood. And I was like, and I hung signs, "Don't jump over this fence." You know, I was like, what the heck is wrong with these people?
Dogs never bit. They were afraid of getting addicted to tobacco.
Well, one time I was told that my dog bit somebody. And I said, "Well, does your kid have all the shots? Because now I'm worried my dog is going to get sick."
Yeah, I know, right?
Oh, man. People today, it's just can't handle the truth and do not act responsibly. So we do the best we can to be responsible so they don't come after us.
That's why we do old-time radio.
That's what we do on Tiny Radio. Blah, blah.
It's the right thing to do.
Oh, man. It just, yeah, that actually happened once. And I was fearful that they would take my furry son and have him euthanized because of their stupidity. And I was like, oh, my, I was worried about that. Happily, joyfully, that glossed over.
If they enter your yard and the dog is there, the dog has every right to take a sniff. Sorry.
No.
No.
Yeah. If a dog bites somebody, then they can say it's vicious.
But yep, and have your dog put
down. In my yard. You know? Yeah, they can put an animal down.
If you have a yard and they cross the fence to get into your yard, then the dog has every right to protect his property.
I think so.
Yeah. I agree with you both.
That's their job. That's their damn job.
That's their job. But it's still a kid under 18 and all this other ridiculous stuff, and you have to protect the child and all. And I'm like, yeah. If they had wanted to get my dog destroyed, they could have. And I couldn't have said anything about it.
Yeah.
You know, I would have said, there's a fence.
I could have said something, but I'd get arrested for what I'd say.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, so I, you know, I was glad it didn't go to that.
Say, come for my gun. Come for my dog. Next time I'll use my gun. When your kid chops in the yard.
They do have a weird thing, and I can't remember what it's called.
Don't sleep too lightly if you hurt my dog.
No, I know, but there's something in Florida about defending yourself. I can't remember what it's called.
Stand your ground laws.
Yeah, it's a stand your ground law.
Yeah. But you know, if you took out a kid on your property with a gun, you might get off with those laws, but it's not going to bode well for you.
that's what the moat is for.
Yeah. I mean, you know, to that point, I wouldn't mind having a moat. You know, good 6-foot moat. Oh, kid drowned. He was on my property.
Forget drowned. That's what the gators are for in the moat.
I was going to say he didn't actually drown. The gators got him before he could drown. Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah.
End of evidence.
Now, for that would be called a man trap, and you can't do that. But you could have a moat. But would a moat be a man trap?
I thought that was Marilyn Monroe, wasn't it? A man trap?
Yeah, that was a man trap. Me too.
We're just hashtagging all over the place.
I'm telling you, we're a hashtag show this week.
Yep.
That was crazy. About two episodes had the wrong moral on them. I was like, oh, one was the wrong show, and one was I put the wrong moral with the wrong show. And then I was like, wait a second, that doesn't make any sense.
Sometimes they're not supposed to.
Well, no, they're never supposed to, but they're supposed to relate somehow, some way, some yeah. So,
yeah. Okay. It's all good.
And I don't know what's going to happen to my internet. Dave, if you want to write this down, you can. It's up to you. Where is it?
Yeah, you still having that much trouble with your internet? Okay.
Or you can use a notepad on your computer. Okay.
I guess I can do that. Let me see.
I have crayon.
To here. To here. To new. To text. Okay, I got it.
You have crayon.
Okay. For the CBS Radio Mystery Theater tomorrow, moral is playing a shell game using real bullets gets real serious real quick.
I hear typing.
Oh yeah, he's using a notepad.
Got it.
There you go. All right.
Hey, well done.
There's the Garless Guard moral of the story.
And people listening in the archive, if you're listening before tomorrow night's show, don't spoil it for everyone.
Don't spoil it. Yeah, all right. Don't spoil it.
Don't spoil it for everyone. Man.
Eight people are going to try and spoil it.
That's right. Maybe five, maybe three. Who knows?
Maybe five, maybe three, maybe three and a half. So.
Maybe, yeah. Well, both listeners. I don't know.
There we go.
Well. I bet you CW.
Well, I'm surprised. Yeah. I'm surprised it hasn't cut out yet. It's 8:55.
No, it'll go at least a half hour. Sometimes Dave and I have gone a little longer, haven't we?
Oh, wow. Okay.
We have. I think I'm showing him got about...
close to an hour.
The clock is really weird. I'm looking at like three minutes and about 20 seconds left.
Yeah.
Or no, at 33. Or 33. I don't know. I can't. Yeah, it's 33.
Oh.
Yeah. Oh, my God.
Yeah, it's 30. Because if I highlight it, it looks like 33. If I don't
highlight it, I have no idea
what it is.
Yes, it's real dark.
Yeah.
I see it counting down. I didn't realize that's what it was counter
for. Yeah, 3301 and now 3259. We don't have to talk that long, do we?
I'm not going to make it.
Yeah.
Well, in honor of CW, we need to bring in Mr. Durante CW's way tonight.
Okay, there you go.
Where you just are we ready?
Yes, we are ready. It's
okay. Right. Well, then, Mr. Durante, please, you're on. How's that?
Good night. There you go.
Good night.
Me too.
It's your time.
Good night.
No law. What for this sake? Good night. We've
had a few laughs, and it's time for toodaloo.
See you next week.
Yeah.
And
ink-a-dink-a-doo. Yeah.
Good night. Good
night.
We lost them.
Good night, folks. And good night, Mrs. Calabash. Wherever.
She's in Poughkeepsie. Poughkeepsie, I tell you.
Poughkeepsie.